Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX. Time to talk to our pal Ricky Horton. Rick, how you doing, my friend?
I'm great, Dave. Great to chat with you.
So before I let you and Wheels get into the X's and O's of the final day of the trade deadline, let's do a Ricky question. Put us on the field. Put us in the dugout in the clubhouse this time of year for players.
Yeah, so basically there's two things that are going on. One is, you know, you have relationships with guys that might be moving on, which is hard. I mean, they're teammates. You're kind of battling together, so you have to be sensitive to that. You don't want to stand in the middle of the clubhouse and say, hey, we really need left-handed relievers when you're standing there next to a guy who's a left-handed reliever. So it's awkward in a way, but it's also kind of, you know, a test to see whether or not your management believes that you have a chance to do something. And so it can be kind of a boost when the team makes a deal, which obviously the Cardinals did.
You know, it would be like, and I'm not trying to be funny here, I really mean it. It would be like if they traded Rooney and you found out in the middle of a broadcast, or they traded Rachel or Wheels, and you're like, hey, they're on Casey now.
Yeah, so I mean, you always are on that, Dave, there's the people part of the business of baseball. There's the fan part, there's the kind of the stats part, and there's all of that, but then there's the people part. Not many businesses can you just be told you have to go to the competitor tomorrow and goodbye. And now it is a little different. Obviously it's a short career and guys understand that they're mercenaries almost. And so it is different, but it's still got the human component to it. Your wives know each other. They drive to the ballpark. The kids hang out and now you're on another team. You know, in the case of Tommy Edman, Tommy's a good dude. I mean, I like Tommy a lot. And the fact that he's moving on is good for him, but it's also got some hard moments too.
So when you look at the deal yesterday, Rick, obviously we all know Tommy Pham really well. The good news with him is the things that the team needs, like some production against left-handed pitching, he's doing well now, and he's always done well at that. So you kind of know what you're getting with him. And obviously Eric Fetty, we've seen him. He pitched against the Cardinals earlier this year, and strangely, the Cardinals are one of only two teams that scored 5 runs on him this year. Every other game's been less than that. He's been very good, and I don't know if you remember watching that game or not, but back in early May, he did not look good against the Cardinals, but he's been pretty outstanding outside of that outing.
Well, he has, and what I do remember is watching him 500 times in spring training when he was with the Nationals. I mean, he was just one of those guys. It seemed like, who's pitching today? Well, Fed is like, well, here we go again with him. But that was pre him going to Korea and learning kind of the sweeper, learning how to pitch at a higher level. And, you know, sometimes it takes that for guys. It took that for Miles Michaelis to go to another team to learn how to become an all-star, at which he did. So you know, I'm not worried about him having one bad outing against the Cardinals, but I think the Cardinals got what they wanted in him. And honestly, you know, I kept asking people, is this deal for real? I mean, where's the other shoe that's going to drop? I feel like this is a kind of a very good deal for the Cardinals. Now, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But on the face of things right now, as of today, it's a very good deal.
Yeah, for this year, it's a no-brainer because you don't take anything away from what you already have. I mean, you had Tommy Edman, but he hasn't played yet. So, and you don't know when he's going to play or what he's going to be capable of coming off a wrist injury and an ankle injury. So you're taking some uncertainty there and replacing it with a guy that will start every fifth day, which is a necessity. I know, Rick, the rotation has plenty of guys, and a lot of these guys have done well. But you're also in the stretch run where you're going to start getting some fatigue. Yeah. The bullpen's getting a little tired, and the more the rotation can carry, the better.
Yeah, that is very true, and there's very few off days. In fact, we're in a stretch now where there aren't any, so the idea of having six-man rotation, kind of, for a week or so, because you got a new guy that you can fit in and push everybody back a day is a really good thing, for guys like Sonny Gray and Lance Lynn and even Kyle Gibson. So I think that's a really good thing. And, you know, honestly, you got a proven guy in terms of what he's been able to do throughout the course of the year. So you got a kind of a known quantity, but the other cool part of this is Tommy Pham brings you some attitude, man. I mean, you're around Tommy Pham when you first meet Tommy Pham, you kind of like, I don't know what to think of this guy, because he's going to say it like it is. And then that becomes very refreshing, but you know, here's what I would say about Tommy Pham. He is not for the faint at heart. and I think sometimes a clubhouse needs a guy who is not for the faint at heart.
So speaking of saying it like it is, yesterday Ackerman had Joe Buck on Total Information AM, and Joe always speaks his mind. And I'm paraphrasing here, but when asked about, this is pre-Tommy Edman trade, but asked about the trade deadline, he said, look, Cardinals have to do whatever they can do, but moving the pawns around, moving the small pieces on the chessboard, he doesn't think will make up for Arenado and Goldschmidt not producing. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think we're all still banking on that. And I know, I think Ollie Marmol would say the same thing. I mean, I think Joe's 100% right. I actually could have asked him because I played golf today, and apparently I found out that I hit a drive into his backyard. This is a fact. I hit a drive into Joe's backyard. Now, I don't know where Joe lives, but whoever I was playing with said that's where he lives.
Oh,
so I owe him an apology, number one. And if he finds a Titleist that has the number 49 on it, it's mine.
That is awesome. I love that. So follow-up question, and I don't mean this to be offensive to anyone, but at what point, when you have great players, possible future Hall of Famers like Arenado and Goldschmidt, when they have a bad season, you go, well, they didn't live up to expectations. If they have a second bad season, when do you go, this great player is now a good player?
Yeah, well, and then the question becomes, what do you do with that good player? I mean, because that happens. Everybody goes from great player to good player. I mean, think about that. I mean, who hasn't? Stan Musial went from great player to good player.
Yeah.
In fact, he had a day, we just celebrated an anniversary, where for goodness sakes, he struck out 3 times a game, which, you know, that's kind of commonplace today, but it's the only time he did it in his career, and he was 42 years old. So it's going to happen, maybe at 42, maybe at 38, and I think, honestly, the deterioration of skills is not just you know, strength and stamina and all that and how hard you work. Sometimes it's eyesight. Sometimes it's reflexes. Sometimes it's genetics that are beyond your control. So I don't think we should be mad at guys that decline, but you try to predict when that will be.
Yeah.
It's an inexact science. And the best thing to do is just move them down the lineup and see if they respond and get and work their way back up to the top.
Yeah, one of the hard things, Rick, this is true for every position, but I think it's probably more markedly true for a hitter because it's a reactionary position as opposed to like a pitcher. Now, there are still things, though, that can go wrong for pitchers in what I'm going to say, but when you have certain types of injuries, there are times that it just changes how your body moves and the timing of how it moves. And those small differences might not be apparent if you're just looking at it naked eye, but they can explain why somebody's missing a pitch they used to hit.
So I'll give you a hitter example and a pitcher example. The pitcher example, Mark Mulder. Mark Mulder had a surgery, and he came back, worked very hard, but his arm angle was a slightly different because his shoulders are tricky business, and he was never the same guy. Was not for lack of effort. Was not. It's just a surgery that, you know, sometimes they work great, sometimes they don't, and in this case, it didn't. But, man, he was a stud pitcher that could have made a deal, a really good deal, but unfortunately, it took him the wrong way. Willie McGee's my hitter example. And Willie, you know, there was a time where they tested Willie's eyesight and told him he should wear glasses. They were wondering whether he was seeing the ball, and then that got in his head, and just his timing was off, and just a very little thing like depth perception, eyesight, can take a hitter from a, you know, a batting champion in the National League and in the American League to a guy that was hitting 260. And so, I mean, it's the fact. It's aging. We all go through it. And I don't know that all of us have gone through it yet, but everybody else apparently has.
You know, it's so obvious, but it's such a great point to kind of linger on. Whether you are a professional baseball player, a baseball broadcaster, you do a radio show, you're a bricklayer, whatever it is, the best go from great to really good to, well, we're going to have to move on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look.
Yeah. So you try to enjoy the journey along the way. And I'm going to go back to my golf today. I measured off one of my drives, and I thought, oh, clearly this one was 250-plus, and it was like 235. And it's like, oh, man, what happened? Where did my strength go? And it's like, well, you know, it's a fact. You have to deal with it. So then the point is, do I linger on that? Do I get grouchy about it? Or do I just enjoy playing golf? And that's what I hope players do, athletes do, is just enjoy the journey, and when the journey ends, somebody will tell you.
I've never hit a golf ball 200 yards in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
I only play the 7-iron, though.
So. Oh, okay. Well, then you probably did.
He's lying. He's lying. Do you want to play for money?
Dave's trying to snooker us.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Hey, I got a lot of friends like you, Dave.
So, Wheels, anything latest on the wire? Anything about Dylan?
Yeah, so nothing hardcore, like nothing like imminent, but the reports are that there are a couple of teams interested in him. The return would most likely be a rental reliever.
Yeah.
So they mentioned the Washington Nationals and Dylan Floro, who's a 33-year-old reliever who's had some success. Luis Garcia with the Angels was another guy mentioned, but clearly there are teams that want to give him a chance to come out and play in a low-pressure environment and just get playing time, right?
Because
it's hard to get back when you can't get yourself on the field.
I think he's a good investment. I'll be one to stand up and say I think Dylan's a good investment.
Well, I love Dylan, and I wish him the best. And with Lane Thomas leaving Washington, I mean, that would be a perfect fit, I think, for the Nats. Again, we're down to the wire here. We've got, 3 hours left? So, something's got to happen fast.
Yeah, and it seems likely because when you look at the roster, Rick, I mean, Tommy Pham's going to be here today. And, you know, they're going to have some other, you know, they got a little time because they're not adding Eric Fetty until later in the week. So they don't have to make a move today, but you only got 4 spots on the bench. And if Tommy Pham is coming in, somebody's got to go out.
Yeah.
And you only got 4 position players to choose from. And one of them's a backup catcher and that guy's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So you may have to go light on the bench for a bit, but, you know, it'll all work itself out a few days from now, and then we'll have to kind of figure out who's on first and who's on second. I don't know third base.
Rick, Wheels was talking about that Sonny May miss a start coming up. Anything of concern there that you know about?
No, not that I'm aware of. You know, I think everybody's kind of got the it's not a dead arm, but it's just you get an August arm. I mean, it's a lot of innings and a lot of wear and tear, and it's not that it's a dead arm, but, you know, the heat, I think, is a factor, the doubleheaders, the rain delays, and this is not an excuse. It's a fact. It's just one of the variables that comes into play when you try to manage a team, and sometimes you look to – I mean, we used to look to skip a start for a guy when he was going hard, and, you know, if you've only got 5 starters, you can't really do that, so it gets a little tricky.
Yeah, so, Rick, the story – it hasn't been announced by the team, but the word is that that McGreevy's going to start tomorrow, which would allow them to maneuver a little bit with Sonny to give him a little bit of extra time. Now, there's nothing specific about an injury, nothing like that, and it sounds like it's just maintenance-type stuff.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, I notice every time he pitches. I mean, I get tired watching Sonny pitch. I'm not saying I like what he's doing, but I look at him sweating and, breathing hard, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, give that guy some oxygen. But it is... You know, it's St. Louis. Now, he's from, Tennessee. It's not like he's, not used to the heat. But I just think, age-wise and all of that stuff, and the fact that he's a max-effort pitcher, which, again, that is where we are in baseball right now. We got a lot of them, and Sonny Gray's one of them. He's not going to let up. He's going to throw every curveball as hard as he can, every fastball as hard as he can, and that wears you out after about 80 pitches.
So given the new pitcher we have coming in, Rick, if you were making the roster, would you go with the 6-man? How would you do it? Would you put Pallante in the bullpen?
I would go for the 6-man 1 or 2 times through the rotation, but I would not stay that way because I do not think that is a – healthy thing to do to a bullpen because you start looking at the bullpen and realize that you don't have enough guns out there. I feel like that's that creates other problems when you do that, but I think you can work around some off days, maybe do it once, maybe twice.
Plus, each one of these guys probably only has, what, Rick, maybe 8 to 10 more starts, and you can't really afford to have fewer from your top 2 or 3 guys.
No, and I think part of that, too, is also kind of just limiting their innings. Not necessarily their starts.
Good point. Yep.
All right, buddy. Have a great call. We appreciate the time as always.
Yeah, great to chat with you guys.
224 DGS on KMOX. Coming up at 3 p.m., we have Bernie Miklas. 2:30, we have a new segment, the Rachel segment, which he calls the Rachel segment. I like that.
That was an Andrew.
Oh, that's very clever. I should have known it was your work.
Yeah, that's good.
Speaking of Andrew, so you buy a lot of dumb stuff like me.
I do.
And your wife finally joined the party.
We pull up to the house last night on the way home from work, and there is an enormous box that is blocking our door. And she squeals with delight. She's so happy. Her hammock has arrived. She ordered an enormous hammock, which is currently, I showed you guys a picture, is currently in my living room.
She slept in it, right?
She slept in it. She's been, she didn't work today. She's not gotten out of the hammock today. She was in the hammock when I left. I could barely get out the door because the hammock is taking up the space in front of the door.
She's so tiny, it must be like a large baby in like a... A baby Bjorn.
The sides of it cover her, so when she gets in it, it just like collapses inward.
And did you get in it?
Like a cocoon. I did get in it for about an hour and a half last night, which was, I'd never been in a hammock before.
Any trouble getting out?
You know.
They're tricky.
It was.
No, that's not a big guy joke. They're tricky.
It was incredibly difficult and spent about, I'm going to say it, 5 full minutes trying to get out of that stupid
thing. Did you
finally
just dump?
No, so what I ended up doing, I couldn't dump because, again, this is set up in a space that is not built for it. Like, if it was in a big, empty room, I would have just dumped and rolled, obviously. But I couldn't dump because it's up against the wall. So what I ended up having to do was, like, roll back, twist, and then push up off the stand. And then
relaxing.
I mean, getting out was not great, but getting in and being in there was fantastic. Like I said, I'd never been in a hammock before. Those things are great. It's so much fun. It's so comfortable.
So you're going to miss sleeping with your wife?
Yeah, I think so. I think she's a hammock person
she
now.
She belongs to the hammock now.
The thing is, I have already...
Gilligan and Skipper.
I have already pointed out that this thing... I mean, we live in an 800-square-foot house. It's not a big house. And now... probably 100 square foot of that is hammock. So, like, I don't know what we're going to do with this thing.
So it was a surprise to you?
It was a surprise to me. I was not expecting there to be a Temu hammock.
Yeah.
Temu being one of the new...
Yeah, I'm missing out on Temu. What's the deal with that?
It's just garbage.
Garbage?
It's not garbage. It's like a wholesale... kind of generic. But remember AliExpress and Wish.com and stuff?
Yeah.
Those were really taken off. It's very similar to those. You're going to get stuff for very cheap. It may not be the highest quality. Hammock seems fine. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was a little nervous the first time I plopped into it. I was like, we'll see what happens here. But I'm only like 2 feet off the ground. It'll be fine. But it seems to be of strong stock.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the McDonald's has a new permanent item coming?
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Big Arch, and it looks like a Big Mac with fried onions and a new tangy sauce, but they're calling it a new permanent item. They said it's the first one since the Chicken McNugget where they've committed like this is here to stay.
That's
wow.
Cool.
The McChicken came before the Chicken McNugget? I don't know if I knew that.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think they just said the chicken McNuggets were the last thing that they put out and said, we don't care what you think of them.
Wow.
We're not taking them off the menu.
Okay.
I'm sorry. You said it has an onion ring on it?
It has like fried onions on the top of a green bean casserole.
Oh, okay.
And then regular onions like you'd get on like a quarter pounder.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing, though, I put something about this on the sheet, is going to be the price. We know that McDonald's has been taking a lot of heat for their prices lately, but did you know that the prices have actually gone up 40% since 2019?
Wow.
Which, it's still inexpensive. It's fast food. But just think if groceries went up 40% or, you know, normal stuff 40%, that's it's pretty bad.
And I mean, my wife and I eat at McDonald's fairly regularly. It's one of our favorites. And we will go far out of our way to, we do the app deals and stuff, and we go out of our way to order, you know, cheaply because it's supposed to be cheap. And we'll still end up spending a good $15 for the two of us, which is a lot for McDonald's.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
235 DGS, top of the hour. We'll be talking to Bernie Miklas. Lots to talk about today with the trade deadline. Pardon me. I get choked up about Bernie Miklas.
I do too. Bernie's my buddy.
Ron, before he left, was telling us a little fun fact that the gentleman who invented tiramisu passed away, and we're like, was he 300 years old?
Was he a vampire?
He's 81 years old. That stuff's only been around for like 50 years.
Wow. What?
Yeah.
It's crazy. That just does not ring
all
true.
All this time, I thought I was eating like an ancient Italian delicacy or something.
It was invented in the 1970s.
Wow.
Get out of here.
Yeah. You think you know something about the world.
Yeah. I just figured that was like some ancient Italian like Julius Caesar had tiramisu while he was...
Dude, I for real feel fancy when I have tiramisu. And we'll finish with the tiramisu, please. You know it's 300 years old.
The first time I heard, is it pho? Is that one of the things that was like it made in California in the 1980s or something like that?
Sounds right.
And it's just like, you're just like, that can't be right.
Today is International Day of Friendship.
Oh, cool.
Happy for my friends. Yeah. And it's National Cheesecake Day.
Oh,
your favorite.
Yeah. That's kind of apt.
Ooh, might have to make a stop on the way home.
Also, Krispy Kremes have $1 donuts tomorrow in honor of the Olympics. And IHOP has brought back all-you-can-eat pancakes.
There
how many pancakes can you put away?
Depends on how hungry I am.
That is a good question. I'm going to say...
You're going to overestimate because you are not a big eater.
I still think I can do...
Here comes something dumb.
10.
Dumb. You can't eat 10
the
pancakes.
The regular size ones, though, like because theirs are pretty big.
Yeah, those.
Theirs are like a whole plate.
I'm talking about an IHOP pancake. I feel like I could do 10.
Ooh.
I'll give you $20 for everyone over 8.
Ooh, now we're talking. I mean, if that's the case, I'm
and
going to...
And you give
to...
me 20 for everyone under 10. Right.
Ooh.
I'm gonna force myself to do 15 and collapse.
Rach already does every segment with us and does headlines, but she's going to start doing a daily segment the way that Wheeler does Stairway to Kevin and A Little Slice of Kevin. So
Kevin, help us.
Man, those are so much better than what I came up with.
The segment?
Sports ball with Kevin.
Yeah, he wants to do a sports ball with Kevin.
Gotcha. What you got, Rach?
Okay, so you may remember whenever the iPhone first came out, the gun emoji used to be a pistol.
Yep.
It looked like a real pistol.
Yep.
Maybe 5-8 years ago, something around there, they changed it to a water pistol. Mm-hmm. I guess it's just a way to be less triggering and offensive towards people. Well, Elon Musk has decided that on Twitter, they're not doing the water pistol anymore.
Boy.
They're going back to the regular pistol. And I saw a think piece about it yesterday, and someone was like, oh, this is just another example of Elon wading into the culture wars and, you know, turning over stones that don't need to be overturned. And I'm thinking, all right, is it really that big of a deal? But I wanted to see how you guys felt about, is this the best use of someone like Elon Musk's time?
Yeah.
It's kind of an odd choice. But do you think it means anything to make a decision like
so,
this?
So, two things. The pistol doesn't offend me. Yeah, I'm kind of right down the middle like I am with most political views. I do believe that guns don't kill people, people kill people, but you have to keep guns out of the hands of people who are liable to kill people. So an emoji of a gun doesn't bother me. When I was a kid, I walked around the streets of South Roxana shooting at cars with a fake machine gun, and they would shoot right back with a little finger pistol. Mm-hmm. I know those days are long gone, but I'm not offended by that. What I'm offended by is Elon Musk. I remember when my good friend Andrew used to tell me years ago, like, this guy's a villain. And I'm like, you're just mad because he's got so much money. I don't think he's that bad a guy. I'm starting to think he's a bad guy.
He just seems to waste a lot of time on stuff like this, where it's like, okay, if you want to use the pistol emoji, it doesn't offend me either. I was at, when they changed it to a water pistol, I was kind of like, oh, okay, well, whatever. But then I moved on with my life because it's meaningless at the end of the day. But I mean, it's just odd for someone with that many jobs and that much money and that much power and that much influence to fixate on something like this.
Yeah.
And it does seem like it's trying to send some sort of larger message like, oh, we're going to fight the woke with
do
our
you think
pistol emoji.
There's any way to be the richest guy in the world and not be a weirdo?
No.
No, but you can also not be the weirdo that bugs the crap out of everybody else. Like
be a weirdo on your own time.
Like if, it's a but, specific but I mean, like, kind of weirdo.
If you're, that, if you're that wealthy, why do you even care about politics? Like, none of it touches you. Nothing impacts you. Literally nothing impacts you.
He seems bored.
That's what it is you have all this power and you want to use it. And I've begun thinking that the whole Twitter thing, again, not going full like tinfoil hat here, but just like it feels like it's all been on purpose. Just because it allows him to be relevant, it allows him to influence public opinion in some ways, it allows him to try to influence politics. And he would spend that amount of money to do that because who cares? Like when you're worth, what is he worth? $250 billion? What's $40 billion? Who gives a crap?
It's no conspiracy. He was very open about that.
Yeah.
When he bought Twitter, it wasn't like this is a good business decision for me. It was very openly because he wanted to fight back against left-wing bias in the media and
yeah, he said
culture.
It was to protect free speech, but it does seem to be tilting in one particular direction where the speech
is
being protected.
If I had $1 billion, I would be like Marlon Brando from Apocalypse Now.
He'd be living in the jungle. Well, you would be in Colorado instead of the jungle.
I would be on a compound watching Ancient Aliens having someone feed me tostadas through a funnel.
Yeah, I mean, like, I understand that if you reach that level of wealth, there's a certain drive in you to do things, right? And that's how you get to that point, to accomplish things. That's great. But, like, focus on space. If you're that much above the rest of the political world, why would you even care?
Have you heard his latest thing in space he's doing?
No.
Oh, you're going to love this. A fellow billionaire, some guy, I think his name's Isaacson, I don't know how he made his money, but a fellow billionaire is going to pay him a couple billion to take him to space to be the first civilian to do a spacewalk.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, talk about, you know, like in the olden days, you had sharecroppers and you had the Rockefellers. But now you have these guys who can literally pay to go do a spacewalk.
Yeah, and there's nothing like, I don't know if there's anything that I can really point to and be like, here's why this is morally wrong. But I can say it's a really bad look. Or yeah. it just feels, it's like you're rubbing everyone's faces in it. Yeah.
I would also go down the line of, I don't know that what I'm about to say means that anything is morally wrong. But the fact that so many billionaires have so much is a large part of why we have so many problems.
Yeah. And
because when a handful of people have the net wealth of big countries, there's not enough of everything for everyone. We're in a world that has a finite amount of resources.
Yeah, where the morality comes into play is the fact that there isn't an infinite amount of money. There only is so much money as backed by our, you know, whatever currencies and
forecasts. I think I'd be a bad billionaire because I told you earlier there was a guy asking for money on the street today. And I normally am generous, but he had an iPhone and a Britney Spears microphone. And I'm just like, dude, I'm not sure you need this cash. If I were a billionaire, I can either walk in space or I can feed a million people.
That's the thing I don't understand. How do you make that choice?
Yeah, how does that not, and maybe you just, you know, you're sort of insulated from it once you have that much money, but how does that,
you make a deal with yourself.
I think it does something to your brain.
Yeah.
I think it's probably like being like an exceptionally beautiful person or something. You're in this bubble of everyone's treating you a certain way.
Well, because they want your money. Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, like...
the burden of my life.
Yeah.
Well, Davey, totally. Why are you laughing?
You did buy lunch, Dave.
I don't understand why that's funny.
He's like, I have children.
Okay, part two to this is, since we're talking about emojis and the pistol emoji, I'm wondering, how do you guys feel about emojis as a whole, as a way to express yourself?
Because, I love them.
I love them too. I think of them as like a helpful tool for expressing a tone.
You can say anything in the world as long as you wink.
Yeah, send the wink, send the blushing, smiling emoji.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I use emojis wrong because they'll mean something to me.
Yeah.
And then, like, sometimes I'll send the angel emoji, and the goal of that is just to be like, but I don't think other people are taking it that way.
Yeah.
Weren't you sending the hug emoji as two hands up, like, woo?
Yeah, because it's like the two hands out. And I thought it was like jazz hands, yay. But it means hug. And I would send that to people I shouldn't have been hugging for the longest time. Yeah, it means hugs.
I didn't know that.
So you got to do a little research before you get too into the emojis.
So I had 100 or more texts from friends and people when my mom passed away. And it's not like I don't have time to answer, but a lot of times I would say, like, thank you, that means so much. And they would say something, and then I would heart what they said. But then I would feel bad, like it was lazy.
No, it's
no,
not.
No, not at all. Nope.
It's totally appropriate. It's better than just letting it hang. Mm-hmm.
But also okay to let it hang in those circumstances.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's totally fine to do that. But I think the heart emoji is going above and beyond to be like, and thank you. Like, yeah. It's like a second thank you. We talked about this when you were out, Dave. Gen Z is talking about how the thumbs up, like if you were to like mm-hmm. a message like that, it's aggressive
I agree
and it's
with Gen
unsettling.
Z.
Do you really?
I only give the thumbs up to Andrew, mm-hmm. right? Because yeah. you know I mean, cool
yeah,
buddy.
That's right. good. And I'm usually texting you at like 9 o'clock at night when
yeah.
you're trying
and
to
I also agree with sure. Like the other night, Nick said, is there anything I can do for you? And I said, maybe we could have dinner tonight. And he said, sure. And I read it as sure. Now, I knew it wasn't because it was my son.
Yeah. Right.
But like I don't stew or throw books or something.
I can't believe he shured me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never taken sure badly. Because I use sure a lot. Yeah, for me, I'm like, sure. Yeah, like, sounds good. I didn't think of that, but that's a great idea. That's what I mean by sure, but I know a lot of people think that
it's like a way to... Just throw in the exclamation point. That changes everything. Yeah.
I take it as, like, non-enthusiastic committal. Does that make sense? Like, going like, yeah, sure. Like, not you're not going like, yes, this is amazing, but you're like, yeah, sure, sounds good.
Yeah, think about before we had punctuation.
Oof. Oh, yeah.
Some people don't have it now.
So tell me about it.
Well, I guess they weren't texting, though. They had like a long letter to try.
And if you do use punctuation, evidently you're really old.
Oh, well, I'll stick with that because you'll know what I mean.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'm reading, I'm like, I can't even parse what this is intended to say.
When Phoebe texts me, it's like Sanskrit.
Is she a big emoji user?
No, she is a big abbreviation user.
Oh, Literally, yeah, yeah.
She types in all lowercase letters.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a Gen Z thing.
I'm also a big fan of the graphic image file, the GIF. I love those.
Yeah, yeah. I do too. That's probably another old guy thing.
Because there's so many good ones that can convey exactly what you want to convey.
Mm-hmm. I missed out on memes. Like the whole...
Yeah, I love memes.
I remember when Rach was first with the show is probably when memes kind of got going and you and Andrew would talk about memes. I'm like, yeah, they're the best. And I'd be like,
what's a meme?
I want a meme. Yeah, memes are pretty
amazing.
Yeah,
I think I wear Phoebe out with the GIFs or GIFs
yeah,
or whatever
yep,
they
whatever.
Are.
They're GIFs. It sounds better to say GIFs. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's probably wrong, but who cares?
Do Gen Z use GIFs?
I don't think so.
Not my Gen Z.
Yeah. That's why I send them to them.
Are in and just also I can't tell you how many times I've Googled
what is
something to find out what it is.
I got that from one of my friends the other day. I sent something like RN or whatever, and they just straight up said, I don't know what that is. And I thought it was a pretty common one, so I was surprised to hear that, but I also admired the confidence of just going like, you're not making any sense to me. Explain yourself.
Yeah, now the burden's on you.
Yeah. And then so do you want to say how old you are? I don't want to.
Yeah, like, 33.
Okay, so at 33.
It is bad that I'm getting to the point where it's like, do you want to hide your age?
You never ask a lady her age, right? Dave.
Especially not on the air. But you already have a generation behind you that thinks that you're old.
Yeah.
And so what is the age when you have someone, what do you think, when the next generation looks at you and goes like, you're 24, you don't know what the hell you're talking about?
It's probably around 30, I would think. But I don't know.
And don't you wish that on Gen Z? Like
Oh, it's going to happen to them. That's the thing. Is
it
like
gets us all.
Their whole thing is like, you're old and that's so sad for you. And like, I'm so sorry about those wrinkles. It's like, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't think it was going to happen to me and it's happening.
It's like when Nikki Glaser burned me when she said she had her 20th reunion. I'm like, oh yeah, like we just had our 40th. She goes, they have those?
She, in her latest stand-up, she has a great bit about how girls in their 20s, or when she was in her 20s, she would look at women in like their 30s and 40s and be like, oh my gosh, that is so sad. And then it's like, and then it happens to you. Like, you have so much confidence that it's never going to happen. And it does.
As a guy,
it's inevitable.
You wake up one day and you're going to Schnucks and you put on your shorts and the only shoes you can find are dress shoes and you're like, meh.
Yeah. Yeah. Next thing you know, you'll be the one going, you know, when I was young, we didn't do these stupid things.
So true. Bernie Miklas coming up at the top of the hour. We'll talk all things Cardinals and the trade deadline, which is only a couple of hours away. You know why I am ready for Kamala Harris to pick her VP? I am so sick of the BS. I'm so sick of, Kevin Wheeler, you are on the short list to be the vice president. Is this something you're interested in? Oh, I'm dedicated to the DGS.
No.
I'm very happy with my job now, and I'm just, shut up. If they called me and said, Joe Rogan is retiring, and we want to, you're on a list of four people to have the job, I'm like, KMOX who? What? Are you kidding me? Yes, give it to me. $100 million, 10 million listeners? Mm-hmm. Give me. Shut up.
Yeah, the thing that drives me crazy is when they're like, you had a phone call with Kamala yesterday. What did you discuss? And they're always like, well, I'm not going to get into what we talked about.
Shut up.
All right, then why are you doing the interview in the first place? We want the tea.
Just to be clear, I have not been asked to be the VP.
Thank God.
Yeah, just to be clear.
But you'd take it.
Yeah.
Well, I might not even take the Joe Rogan thing because I don't think I would be able to deliver. But if they offered me the VP, I'd have to say, like, this is very flattering, but the world would end. Right?
Oh, I don't know, man. What are they paying? How rich can I get? Because it's going to be a big pain in my ass. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts. In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.